Hey everyone, and welcome back to Scorncast, the official podcast of the Pop Scorn Movie Blog, which can be found at scornpop.blogspot.com. This is Jasper, and on this episode, Kareem Saeed is joining me to discuss In Time, a futuristic thriller that finds Justin Timberlake trapped in a dangerous caste system where money has been replaced by minutes, hours, days, months, and years. Be honest though, he totally had it coming for the love guru and his hair on the cover of that NSYNC Christmas album.
I don't believe we've had the pleasure of your company before, Mr. Salas. Will Salas. Philippe Weiss. You must come from time. You could say I'm gambling my inheritance. You must be young. When you've been 25 for 85 years like I have, and knowing only a random act of violence can take your life, you learn to appreciate what you have. Of course, some think what we have is unfair. The time difference between zones.
I've heard that.
But hasn't evolution always been unfair? Always been survival of the fittest? This is merely Darwinian capitalism. Natural selection.
Absolutely. The strong survive.
So, Kareem, in the dangerous and sexy world of End Time, time is money. Are you glad that in our not dangerous and unsexy world, money is just plain old money? Because then paying for and watching movies like In Time would literally be killing us? Or did you think that In Time was money and time well spent?
The first one. This movie was not good.
It was not good, no. I agree. And for clarification, I was being facetious. I called In Time dangerous and sexy because those are probably words used to describe the movie in the press notes. I don't actually agree with them. I would use the words tedious and doofy.
That sounds good.
It's less exciting than dangerous and sexy.
Doofy?
Doofy.
As in, like, goofy in a doofus sort of manner?
Yes, exactly.
Ah!
Do you not think In Time was doofy?
It's doof-tastic.
Well, I guess we should talk about all the ways that End Time is doof-tastic, and I don't think that we can do that without setting up the world of End Time.
You want me to do that?
Why don't you pitch me the dangerous and sexy world of End Time?
In a future where people stop aging at 25, but are engineered only to live one more year than that, but then they can live longer because time is money, and you can buy it, and then you can live longer. And as a result, there's a class divide, and there are really rich people who are old and live for a long time, but Justin Timberlake is young and might die soon, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So, even though I was kind of riffing on the premise of the movie, I'm going to be honest, I think that it was a solid premise. It's kind of like a neat idea, this notion that, like, you know, instead of money, it's time on your life, and how would the world be different if that were the case? I thought it was a decent sci-fi premise.
The execution of the premise is not terribly good.
So lackluster implementation.
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
Or performance, or whatever you want to call that stuff that Justin Timberlake was doing on screen.
Oh, we'll get to him. I guess this movie is kind of like weirdly timely, no?
Timely?
Well, oh, I didn't even mean it like that. But I mean, this movie uses the word time in so many adjectives and nouns and adverbs. You know, if you took a shot every time they say time in the movie, you'd be plastered. But specifically, I mean, with the whole Occupy Wall Street thing.
You know, I didn't even make that connection until just right now. But yeah, I guess because of all the political upheaval and class divide and whatnot, yeah, I suppose it is timely that this movie came out now.
Really? You just now made that connection?
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it. Yeah.
In this movie, the 1% of the population of, I guess, what is future America? Like, it doesn't really tell you, like, what time that this takes place. This is just sort of like an alternative future or timeline or whatever. So it's one in which people who are very rich, it's not money, it's just that they have a lot of time. They have time literally written on their forearms. It's right. Like a glowy green timestamp. Basically, you get 25 years to live and you stop aging at 25 years. At 25 years, you sort of have like a full body seizure, and you get another year on top of that. So really 26. The clock on your arm starts counting down at age 25 to your 26th birthday. In terms
at which point you would die.
You would die. Right. So you have to work for a living. You can work earlier than 25 and start storing your time, I guess.
They have this, you know, it's a device in the movie that you can store time on. And it's like that little cartridge that you can load time onto.
Yeah, there are a lot of close-ups of arms in this movie. If you want to see this movie, I hope you're up for spending time getting really familiar with these actors' arm hair and freckle patterns.
Yeah.
So basically, the really rich people have all the time. They're the 1%, I guess. 99% of the people don't have much time at all. They sort of live day to day. But you're not really sure if that's even the case. What we're shown, basically, the movie takes place in two different time zones, as they're called, I think. You have the 99% living in this like ghetto slum area. I think it's called Dayton. And then the 1% live in another time zone that's, I think, the furthest time zone away. I guess this is laid out geographically to like increase in time wealth. They are in New Greenwich, which sounds sexy and dangerous, right?
Yes. Yeah. Like it's somewhere in New York.
So let's talk about how time is transferred, which is sort of what the movie hinges on. Two characters would grasp each other's forearms so that their clocks are touching, their forearm, green, neon, glowy clocks.
Sure.
And the person whose arm is on top is the one receiving the time, and the person whose arm is on the bottom is the one giving time.
Yes.
And there seems to have to be a willingness on the part of the receiver to receive, no? Like any good receiver would say?
You have to agree, almost, or be forced. Actually, that's one thing in the movie that we find out later on, is that there's kind of like an underground arm wrestling thing that goes on.
Yeah.
Nope. But for the most part, yeah, I mean, you do it consciously. You grasp arms with somebody, and depending on which way you turn your arm, you're either getting time or giving time.
The movie sort of arbitrarily deals with this, depending on what the situation calls for. The movie's plot is essentially what we should talk about here really quick before I go into my giving and receiving tangent. But Justin Timberlake plays a guy who is among the 99%. He lives in this, you know, really shitty area of this really shitty time zone.
Right.
He is at a bar one night, and he encounters this millionaire, or thousandaire, I guess.
Yeah, he was the rich guy in town.
Yeah, Matthew Bomer from White Collar plays this guy. Justin Timberlake saves his life by getting him out of this really seedy shithole bar before these kind of bandits who are like the Bowery Boys come in. And they just kind of roam around this area and steal people's times, which is something to bring up here, because how can you give somebody your time unless you're wanting to give them your time? It's very strange, but Matthew Bomer was in this bar because he's had it. He's basically like a vampire. He's lived for hundreds of years. I think he's 105?
Right, he's old.
Yeah, he's very old, but of course he looks 25, or actually not, since Matthew Bomer is not 25. We'll get to that in a minute too, because I want to talk about how these people do not all look like they're 25. But he wants to get rid of all of his time and just expire. He wants to let his clock run out. So he and Justin Timberlake crash in this abandoned building or whatever, and they spend the night together, which is not as sexy or fun as it sounds, or dangerous.
It's not sexy. It's doofy.
It's really doofy. It's very strange because Justin Timberlake is like, well, I guess we should go to sleep now. It's like, what? Like,
yeah.
So
in opposing chairs facing each other.
Yes. Then in the middle of the night, Matthew Bomer gets up and takes Justin Timberlake and does the like giving receiving hand gesture thing. And he gives Justin Timberlake the rest of his time, which I think at that point is,
it's like 100 years or something.
Yeah, I want to say it was like 105 years or something like that.
Right.
He gives it to Justin Timberlake, who is asleep and not conscious. So, you know, that's kind of a squicky area. Like, if you're asleep, does that automatically mean that you're willing to receive time? Right? I don't know.
Yeah, it was weird. It would just as easily go the other way. I mean, while you were sleeping, somebody could come and steal all your time.
Yeah, that doesn't really add up to me. And Matthew Bomer gives Justin Timberlake all of his time and then goes out on a bridge and very poetically, you know, sits there and watches as his last few seconds tick away. And when he finally, you know, is zapped of all of his time, he falls off the bridge. It was probably very beautiful. Justin Timberlake sees him sitting on the bridge before he falls and runs out to save him, but it's too late. So they have all these cameras everywhere in this future, and the police department, who I guess I don't know if there is still a police department, but the people that are sort of in control of monitoring all this stuff, they're sort of like cops. They're called timekeepers. Of course they are. And they find the body and realize, based on all the number of zeros that are on his arm, that he had like a shit ton of time, which sort of raises the question, I guess everyone is not born with all of those zeros, right? Like, you get more zeros as you add time, and maybe they don't disappear when you lose time. I don't know. The movie doesn't really linger on the details of this thing, which is, I guess, both good and bad. I mean, in a way, it kind of reminded me of Inception, in how it doesn't take time to explain the technology, and that's fine with me. Like, in Inception, they show you a device that they hook people up to, and you're told what it can do, and you see what it can do, but it doesn't really get into, like, the whos or hows or whys, you know, which is fine.
Right.
I'd rather a movie just kind of say this is how it is than come up with some stupid gobbledygook reason for how it does what it's supposed to do.
And, you know, I'm honestly, I'm okay with it too, because that could turn into, in the case of this movie, a lengthy discussion about, like, economics and finance and things, and nobody's interested in that. It's just kind of like, you have to accept, oh, in this world, it's how much time you have left to live, not money. Okay.
Yeah. Cillian Murphy plays the timekeeper that's pursuing Justin Timberlake to try to figure out if he stole this time, you know, how he wound up with all this time that used to belong to Matthew Bomer. I got the feeling that this guy became a detective through, like, a correspondence course that required watching a lot of really bad crime dramas on CBS, because the logic he applies to catching and outwitting Justin Timberlake is generally pretty questionable. When he's pursuing Timberlake, he says things like, "If you have a million years, you are definitely not in a hurry. Look for the slowest car." So it's a lot of stuff that you hear, and you're like, oh, okay, huh?
I wonder how much of that were you willing to just kind of chalk up to, well, maybe in this world where time is money, people's cultural standards for things are different. Maybe people do drive slowly if they have a lot of money.
I guess, what is life like in these middle zones? We're given half the movie in the 99% world and half the movie in the 1% world, and we see Justin Timberlake driving through all these time zones to get from 99 to 1. So I'm wondering, what is life like in these middle zones where people are just sort of like, yeah, we're fine, we're cool, we're happy?
Yeah, that was another thing, and you had brought it up earlier. Not everybody looks 25 in the movie. And I'm curious, is that just kind of like an Amy Winehouse effect? Like, maybe just some 25-year-olds live a lot harder than other 25-year-olds?
I just thought that most of the cast was not believable as 25. You know, Justin Timberlake and Vincent Kartheiser, who comes into the picture later on in the movie, they're in their early 30s. Johnny Galecki, who plays Justin Timberlake's best friend, and Cillian Murphy are in their, like, mid to late 30s.
Really?
Yeah. The only two main cast members of this movie that are actually hovering around 25 are Amanda Seyfried and Olivia Wilde. But getting back to Cillian Murphy and his awful detective skills, I would say that there are cameras everywhere in this future, so isn't this shit being tracked? Like, people are being monitored and everything they do. You would think that one of the easiest ways to control, like, time theft is just monitor the system of how time is exchanged between people. Because you have a case like Matthew Bomer, who plays this rich guy who just winds up in 99% land, and he's blowing all of his time. Cillian Murphy makes a point in his investigation about how Matthew Bomer had to be a murder victim, you know, how he couldn't possibly be suicidal because he had thousands of years in time. But it was whittled down to 105 years by the time he meets Justin Timberlake, so wouldn't that tell an investigator that someone from a high-rent district basically just walks into a ghetto and blows most of his time on drinks for total strangers, just kind of wants to stop the madness?
Yeah, it's weird, and they don't really delve into it too much. I guess, I mean, you can always make the argument that, well, maybe he left most of his time on those little time cartridges that everybody has, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, maybe he has a bank account full of time, and he only took out 150 years to put in his wallet, so to speak.
Maybe the prequel to End Time will explain all of this.
Including why they decided on 25. I have a feeling it's so that people could rent cars.
Well, you can do all the fun things that you need to do at 25. You're old enough to rent a car, to vote, to drink. Did you notice how I threw voting in there? Because voting is very important for young people to do. Wink!
And also so much fun.
Yes. Don't you love our democratic process?
Let's have a frank discussion.
This has been Scorncast. So, on a completely unrelated note to anything that we've been talking about, a completely artless segue here, but this movie is written and directed by Andrew Niccol, who wrote and directed Gattaca, and who wrote The Truman Show. He's very quick to get to the twist of this world, I would say. Like, instead of showing us scenes and having us figure out the quirks of this whole time is money premise and like, the weirdness of the character relationships, he gives you a scene at the very beginning. I think it's the very first scene of the movie, maybe, where Justin Timberlake gives his mother, Olivia Wilde, a birthday present. And instead of, like, playing with the insinuation of both of these sexy, and I'm using finger quotes you might not be able to see, but yeah, these sexy actors who are roughly the same age playing mother and son, he just kind of hits you in the face with it. Justin Timberlake is like, happy 50th birthday, Mom! And I was sort of surprised that the soundtrack wasn't like, dun dun dun!
That was a very awkward scene, too. Like, he gives her quite a passionate hug, too. And for a moment, I was really kind of scared. I was like, oh no, in this strange world where time is money, moms and sons also make out. And I was really freaked out for a second.
But only if they look like Olivia Wilde and Justin Timberlake.
Right.
Because who doesn't want to see that? I'm raising my hand. Let's talk about some of the things that you can buy with your time. A cup of coffee is 4 minutes, which seems weirdly cheap, but maybe that's just because I've been going to Starbucks too much. A bus ride is 2 hours.
Well, now, wait a second. What would you charge for a cup of coffee?
I don't know. Like, that's one of the first things that you see being purchased in the movie. And that's, like, the first price that you hear. Like, is somebody's ordering a cup of coffee from, like, a sidewalk coffee stand. And the person who works there is like, that'll be 4 minutes. And right. I was just like, that's not so bad.
Well, okay. So I'm going to be super lame and calculate it.
What method of calculation are you using?
Well, so if you take, like, the average annual income in the United States, which I think is something like $35,000 a year.
Jesus Christ.
That translates to $16, $17 an hour.
Okay.
Now, $17 an hour, so about a fourth of that would buy you, like, a fancy drink at Starbucks. Yeah, no, I think 4 minutes might be actually expensive.
Oh.
No?
It just sounds so cheap.
But you have to realize, too, that, like, at that point in the movie, Justin Timberlake and his mom were juggling, like, 30 minutes between them.
Yeah, I mean...
So, you know, that's like, the life savings.
That's a huge problem, also, because the people in this time zone are fairly destitute. I mean, there are people literally just dead on the sidewalk.
Right.
But this situation never feels very dire. Like, I kept wondering why, if Olivia Wilde barely had a day and a half left on her clock, Justin Timberlake, for her birthday, bought her a presumably very expensive bottle of wine instead of just giving her the time that the wine cost, which was probably a lot. I mean, if, you know, coffee is 4 minutes, how much is a bottle of wine or champagne or whatever it is? But, well, I mean, every minute counts. If she had another hour, she wouldn't be dead. So, yeah, so there, in your face.
That was actually, like, an issue that I had with the movie, is that they were always kind of straddling this line where they only had a few minutes left to live.
Yeah.
And they seemed strangely calm about it.
Yeah.
So, at the end of her workday, on the day that she dies, Justin Timberlake's mom in the movie has literally, like, half an hour left. And she goes to the bus, which usually costs 20 minutes, and is surprised when it's a little bit more expensive. And I'm like, wow, you didn't plan at all for this.
Yeah.
And your wife is on the line.
Yeah, it's very strange.
It was a little weird.
But then maybe, I mean, the point that the movie is making is these characters are just not very observant. Justin Timberlake, how can I put this politely, is he does not pay attention to things. Like, after he comes into all this time from Matthew Bomer, he goes to his best friend, coworker, played by Johnny Galecki from Roseanne and The Big Bang Theory, and he gives him 10 years of time to match the 10 years that they've been friends. And Johnny Galecki walks right into a bar and starts drinking and ends up literally drinking himself to death. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's some Nicolas Cage in Leaving Las Vegas shit, right? Like, wouldn't you know if your BFF was a devout alcoholic?
He goes on a pretty hardcore bender, and Justin Timberlake seems surprised when he finds out.
Yeah, it's weird. Also weird, in that birthday scene that we're talking about between Justin Timberlake and Olivia Wilde, Justin Timberlake gets ready to leave for work, and Olivia Wilde gives him, I think it's a half hour of her time, so he can have a nice lunch, or whatever that even means in this world. I mean, I don't think much of anything is nice in this time zone. But that doesn't really make sense, considering what we find out about her later in the movie and how little time she has left. It's like these people are pretty blasé about the fact that they could die in less than a day. And maybe that's the point that the movie is making, that these people have been living under this weird time is money regime for a long time, so they're used to living on the edge and taking these chances. But that doesn't make for a particularly like suspenseful viewing or like an urgent viewing experience. Wouldn't the point be better made if Justin Timberlake's mom saw how little time he had and was like, I can't really help you? It's like, have a nice lunch, really, really in time.
If they want us to be stressed out about how little the characters have left, then the characters shouldn't be written in such a way where they just kind of toss the money away and don't really regard it.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, this movie is 115 minutes long, which would buy you a lot of coffee.
Well, what we should say really quickly is that his mother ends up dying because she runs out of time, and he tries to save her, but he can't. So he sort of turns into a time vigilante, if you will.
Right, and a Robin Hood of time.
Yeah, and he decides that he's going to take all of this time that he has, these 105 years that he now has, and he's going to travel to the 1% time zone, New Greenwich. There's a really ridiculous scene where he's sitting in the back of a limousine, or a town car, whatever it is, and he says to no one in particular while he's sitting in the back of the car, I'm gonna take them for everything they've got. I'm gonna make them pay. But even like my performance there was better. Like I sounded like I meant it more than he did. He's just kind of like sleepwalking vengeance or something. But he ends up going to this big party where there's this guy who's played by Vincent Kartheiser from Mad Men. And he's sort of like the villain of the movie, I guess. He's, you know, the king of the 1% pretty much. He's got so many hours. Justin Timberlake encounters him at this card table and they're playing this card game. I don't know anything about cards. Was that poker? What was that?
Yeah, they were playing Texas Hold'em.
Okay. And when Justin Timberlake sits down, we should mention his character's name is Will Salas. And if I remember correctly, you groaned quite loudly at this, but he sits down at the table and Vincent Kartheiser like introduces himself to Justin Timberlake. And Justin Timberlake responds, Salas, Will Salas.
Right.
In a tuxedo at a poker table or whatever.
Poor Justin Timberlake. I think I even commented during the middle of the movie. I think I leaned over to you and said, Lord knows he's trying.
He really is. He does try in movies, but one day he will succeed. I find his presence in movies to be so distracting. I think that he's just one of those guys whose public persona precedes him in most things that he does. He was in a couple movies over the summer and he was in The Social Network, and I think he's hot off that kind of stuff. But really, the only performance that I ever saw that I really enjoyed him in was Bad Teacher, just because I think he was playing somebody that was so not any degree of that Justin Timberlake persona. I find him sort of difficult to watch because I can't sit there and not think, wow, this is Justin Timberlake.
You have a hard time like detaching from his real world self.
I guess so, and maybe that's my own baggage, but I do think that in a movie like this, it's kind of a miscalculation to cast him because he's just not somebody who seems genuine most of the time.
You're making a huge assumption that they cast this movie based on artistic merit, and
I don't think that they did, really. I mean, I think that they cast this movie with, like, who were the hottest, youngest, sexiest people that we can cram in it.
Yeah, they were looking for sexy and dangerous.
Johnny Galecki. Johnny Galecki oozes sexy danger. But getting back to what I was saying, which is actually getting back to what you were saying, that moment where he says, Salas, Will Salas, he's talking like he's James Bond, and you groaned, like, audibly. And for a minute, I thought maybe that was kind of an intentional thing the movie was doing. Like, it was showing that his swagger is completely borrowed from what he digests in pop culture. But then I immediately, like, gave myself a reality check, and I thought, well, wait a minute. In this future, people probably wouldn't be seeing many movies, since that's sort of like spending time to literally spend time.
Right.
So getting back to then what you said related to that, I'd just like to say that if this future was our reality, I would have died a long time ago. And it actually would have been the movies that killed me, like all my friends have warned me for years now.
He spent his last 115 minutes in time.
No, it's going to be something way worse. It's going to be something like Jack and Jill. I know it.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Let's talk really quickly about Vincent Kartheiser, because I think this deserves mentioning. I think, you know, Vincent Kartheiser is a good actor, and he's a handsome guy and all that, but he's pretty ineffectual in this movie. He looks really bizarre, especially around the eye area, and I found it really distracting. In my notes, I wrote down his name, and then I wrote an equal sign, and then I wrote the word shiny, which is probably the best way I can think to encapsulate his performance as this, like, drippingly evil villain.
Actually, he looked younger than 25.
I guess my thing is, I don't think he's very tall in stature, and he doesn't have, like, the heavyweight villain screen presence that this movie desperately needs.
Yeah.
And his performance combined with how he's shot and made up, it's kind of like he's simultaneously too young and too old for the part. And maybe that was kind of the point, like, he's supposed to be, like, this evil pseudo-vampire character, but whenever he was on screen, I kept feeling like I was watching Bugsy Malone, how he was always on the verge of breaking out into that song about how they're the very best at being bad guys. Amanda Seyfried, who we haven't even mentioned yet, plays his daughter, who Justin Timberlake sort of, you know, takes as a hostage, but of course, since they're young and sexy and dangerous, and they both realize that each other is young and sexy and dangerous, they fall in love, I guess. I don't know.
They start making out.
I just found a lot of her posturing very funny. I mean, she looks very good in her wig. She's got kind of like that, you know, retro styling thing going on. Actually, I would say that this whole movie, especially as soon as it gets to Justin Timberlake and Amanda Seyfried running around and she decides to team up with him and they decide to rob time banks together.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like Bonnie and Clyde redone as a car commercial.
Yeah, it was a little weird. If you give her an orange dye job, she's actually like from The Fifth Element.
She needs a dress made out of Ace bandages and she'll be set.
Right.
I would just like to say that even in scenes where Amanda Seyfried is supposed to be, like, intimidating people and robbing time banks and stuff, she stands with, like, one leg parallel to her body and the other leg, like, out a bit. Like, she's, like, on a catwalk and she just got to the end of it.
In every scene.
Yeah, she's definitely doing fashion pose, but, you know, it works. She's smiling with her eyes.
Very Tyra of her.
This movie does one of my least favorite trope things in movies, which happens when Amanda Seyfried and Justin Timberlake decide to, you know, go back and confront her father and steal the time from him because he's got millions of years or whatever and distribute it among people in like the 99%. They go to his office, they break in, and they have to steal his time cartridges or whatever from his safe, which is, of course, locked with a combination. And they have to guess what the combination is in order to get in.
Right.
And it's Darwin's birthday. Which, no. Just no.
They kind of push that whole evolution thing a few times throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Where it's like survival of the fittest, and they try to draw a parallel between that and your economic standing, and it's a weak vehicle.
Speaking of weak vehicles, they decide to rob these banks that are holding time instead of giving it away. And there's a scene where they are in like 99% area and they rob a bank. And the bank is not guarded at all. It just doesn't seem like, you know, there's much of any security there. So in that respect,
right.
It's a tiny bank, I guess. But they drive a car into it and they're able to, like, you know, through the hole in the wall, escape fairly easily. But the way that this movie ends is very ridiculous because they decide, you know, they're going to stay together and continue on doing this whole Robin Hood thing, but with time. And it shows them like they have their guns and they're walking up these stairs to a bank entrance and the camera pulls back and then it pulls out some more and then it keeps pulling back. And you see that they're walking into this bank that's, you know, the size of heaven. I don't know. It's a gigantic
it's like,
bank.
It's like five Smithsonian museums stacked on top of each other.
Yeah. And they're walking in like with a gun each.
Right.
I would have found a new level of respect for this movie that I wasn't anticipating if it cut to black like it does in the movie, but then like a title card that says like 3 minutes later they were shot to death by security.
Yeah, they didn't go there.
I think it's time that we go there though, and by going there, I mean grading it.
I'm going to give this one a C-.
It pains me to say that I am going higher than you, but only slightly. I would go C for this movie. It's like a pretty movie with an interesting premise and like pretty actors. I think that gets it to a certain point, but then it's just sort of spins its wheels. It never really takes advantage of all that it could do.
Yeah.
So I would say that this whole thing is just kind of a waste. I'm not going to save time. No, I'm not going to do it.
And that's going to wrap up another episode of Scorncast. Thanks for literally spending a half hour of your time to listen. Remember to visit PopScorn at scornpop.blogspot.com, where you can comment on our posts, or just click the plus one if you're feeling too lazy to comment. And you can send us an email at scornpop@gmail.com. And don't miss Kareem Saeed's new class, Intro to Coffee Math, coming to the Learning Annex early next year.
Side note, Olivia Wilde's real name is Olivia Cockburn.
Yes. Wow, you really killed it there.
Sorry.